Organic farms are more numerous now in our time, but many, many agricultural operations still rely on pesticides as part of the process of growing successful crops for market, which is a problem when you realize that agriculture West Coast style often involves many, many people at work in fields and orchards as well. Oregon's Occupational Safety and Health Administration, Oregon OSHA, is in the process of adopting rules to keep the people and pesticides safe distances apart. The rules are set to go into effect on January 1st, and like any proposed rules, there have been many discussions about them leading up to this point. Our guest is Michael Wood, the administrator for Oregon OSHA. Thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Happy to do so. Good morning.
So start us off. There are protections in place now, I presume. So what's the process now of getting greater protections?
Yeah, there actually are fairly extensive protections under what's known as the Worker Protection Standard, adopted by the EPA nationally and adopted and enforced by us here at Oregon OSHA in Oregon. And this issue relates specifically to situations where you're applying pesticides and you have a risk of what's called drift. And so there's, to put it really simply, there's the treated area, which is where you intend to apply the pesticides, and then because of wind conditions and the nature of the application method, sometimes drift occurs, and drift is illegal. You're not supposed to apply pesticides outside the treated area, but it certainly happens on occasion. And this rule is designed to create an area called the application exclusion zone, which is outside the treated area but adjacent to it, and designed to provide an added measure of protection for workers and, in the case of housing, for their families as well, that provides an added measure of protection in the event that unintended drift occurs.
So Michael, are there listings of distance now, distances which people have to be away? I mean, with the so-called application exclusion zone?
Well, in the existing rules, no, there aren't. The application exclusion zone is actually a new concept that was introduced by the EPA when they, as part of a comprehensive update to their standard a couple of years ago, and they put in a couple different thresholds, but the one that's of primary interest is for air blast or aerial application of pesticides. You have to be 150 feet away, or you have to make sure that any workers or other people are 150 feet away from the application at the exact time of the application. So it's really a halo that extends from 150 feet really around the spray nozzle and moves as the application moves with it. We've adjusted, 100 feet in the EPA rule. We've adjusted that in a couple different ways in our proposal. One is that for those pesticides where there's a respiratory hazard, we've extended that halo, if you will, to 150 feet. And we've also added a 15-minute cushion so that you don't have the application exclusion zone immediately disappear as soon as the equipment moves on. But there's a 15-minute provision that allows it to continue. We've made some other proposed adjustments to the EPA rules, but those are a couple that relate directly to increasing the protection as they relate to the AEZ.
So are there cases under the existing rules that Oregon OSHA has had to investigate where people did get problems because they were too close to the pesticides or came in too soon after the pesticides were applied?
Well, there's certainly cases in scientific literature. When it comes to the issue of us having to investigate them, no. And one of the difficulties is that when you're talking about occupational disease generally, and that's when you're talking about chemical exposures, whether it's carcinogens, any sort of chemicals in the workplace, there's a real problem with a failure to identify, a difficulty to identify exposures when they occur, and harmful effects related to chronic exposures are just really a challenge. And so one of the things that we know is that pesticides do represent a risk, varying levels of risk depending on the particular pesticide involved. And we know from some of the research in the scientific literature that there are risks through accumulated exposure. And so it's fairly clear that there's harm occurring, but it isn't something that we're able to point to specific instances and say that this individual was exposed, experienced contact with pesticides, and as a result, developed this disease or this condition.
Michael Wood is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the administrator for Oregon OSHA, the Oregon version of the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. We're talking about pesticide protection standards for farm workers coming into effect January 1st. You can join this discussion by phone at 800-838-3760 or by email at jx@jeffnet.org. So you mentioned, obviously, differences in pesticides. The particular pesticides do different things. So is this the set of standards you're developing, the application exclusion zone, is it about sort of a most restrictive sort of thing? Or you're dealing with, like, potentially the most dangerous pesticide and then all others will fall behind that?
It's actually dealing with pesticides as a collected group. So it's a general requirement or set of requirements. It distinguishes between them depending on the nature of the exposure. So as I mentioned, those things that represent a respiratory hazard, we have 150-foot AEZ rather than the 100-foot AEZ for those things where you may be talking about a contact or skin hazard. But there's a lot of guidance for specific application and for people who are involved in applying it that's provided by the pesticide label related to specific pesticides. This proposed rule doesn't go into anything like that level of detail. I do also need to clarify a couple things.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at a comment period that ends in the middle of December, although at this point it's likely we'll extend that to January 31st.
Mm-hmm.
The rule actually will not take effect January 1st. We're hoping to have a decision made early in the year. And the rule also doesn't just apply to agricultural workers. The rule will apply to workers in forestry as well as general industry workers as well.
Okay, so any place where pesticides are used. This is not just for farms. Okay.
Essentially any place they're used in the workplace, which is our jurisdiction.
Okay, and not January 1st. Okay, good to know. Let's take a call here. We have John and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Michael Wood, the administrator of Oregon OSHA.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm just curious to know why Oregon doesn't have laws on aerial spraying as stringent as Washington State's or California's.
All right. Good question. Thanks for that, John. Aerial spraying, is that even in the domain of Oregon OSHA, Michael Wood?
Well, aerial spraying, when it comes to general application, no, that's actually not Oregon OSHA. The AEZ would apply with regard to applications from aerial spraying, and as far as I know, Washington, for example, is looking at applying the EPA requirement, which would be the 100-foot rule. Now, when it comes to limitations on aerial application for general issues of pesticide safety, those sorts of things, those are adopted by the legislature and generally enforced by the Oregon Department of Agriculture.
So what are we generally talking about here? What are the usual sets of conditions in which the pesticide is applied? Because you mentioned an air blast, which I assume is actually coming from a device on the ground.
That's true. And so there are backpack sprayers, obviously, but for large crop applications, there are still aerial applications used, but the primary method is an air blast sprayer, which is a generally hauled behind a piece of equipment, and it has nozzles that are fairly high off the ground, but as it says, they blast using air to cover an area within the field or within the orchard rows, and that's the typical method of industrial application of pesticides for large scale farming, and it's certainly the method that we've had the most discussion about in the context of this rule.
There's also been lots of discussion about farm worker housing. That seems to be a very large area of concern. We were going to have Ramon Ramirez from PACUN, the Farm Workers Union, on to talk to us about this. Give us a sense of what the rules are now and what you're potentially moving to.
Well, with regard to farm worker housing and pesticides, there aren't any specific rules in place now. And when the EPA developed this concept, it's fairly clear that they didn't think about farm worker housing. Their economic analysis, for example, doesn't take into account the issue of moving people out of housing. And so when they laid it out and they put the 100-foot requirement, we did realize that there are a number of places around the state, particularly in orchards, where there is housing that is within 100 feet of trees that occasionally have pesticides applied to them, and so that we'd have to look at how to address the application of the new application exclusion zone requirement to the workers in that housing. And in some situations, we're talking about early morning applications. So one of the things that we had originally proposed last year was the option of staying within a shelter if it was a tightly enclosed shelter, so actually staying in the house and closing it up. We still have that in the current proposal, but only with regard to those pesticides where there's not a respiratory hazard. And so, again, if you're talking about something that the normal PPE, personal protective equipment, would be shirt sleeves and perhaps goggles, that the house could function as a replacement for that. If you're talking about something where you need to wear a respirator, you'd still need to evacuate. We also realized that because the EPA hadn't thought about housing, they hadn't put in any fairly basic requirements, like whether you evacuate or you stay in, you should close the doors and windows. So our proposal addresses the issue of closing the doors and windows, air intakes. We also include a storage area for shoes and boots to avoid contamination being brought in to the living structures. We have some information sharing and instruction on how to keep common areas and other sensitive areas from having problems with pesticide contamination. And then we have information sharing and information station required there. And those things, because they're specifically designed to address the context of worker housing, go beyond anything that that's in the EPA requirement, and certainly anything that we have on the books in our existing requirements.
Is there any, I mean, you can close doors and windows, but if the shelter itself is not terribly tight, if it's kind of drafty even outside of doors and windows, I mean, are there any things in the standards being proposed that would speak to that?
No, there aren't. The standard under consideration doesn't actually address the housing itself, although we do regulate the housing under a separate rule. And it is true that there certainly is housing that is, as you say, drafty. And actually, there's housing that is consciously constructed in a way to allow a certain amount of natural ventilation. But that is why, in the current proposal, we don't allow housing to be used as a substitute for a respirator. And if respiratory protection is required, then for the context of the AEZ, for this area adjacent to the application, the workers and anybody else in that housing would actually need to leave up to 150 feet from the application.
Let me remind our listeners, we're going to hit a couple of acronyms here. AEZ is the Application Exclusion Zone. WPS is Worker Protection Standard. Michael Wood is the administrator at Oregon OSHA, or Occupational Safety and Health Administration. We're talking about the pesticide rules involving people who have to work around pesticides, farms and forests, that sort of thing. 800-838-3760 if you'd like to join the conversation by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Any idea, just a rough break of the pesticides that are a problem for breathing and that aren't?
I really don't have a set of the different labels in front of us, so I don't want to just toss out some random brand names.
Just looking for a percentage, like, you know, how many respiratory concern, how many skin contact concern, that sort of thing.
Well, the industry has told us in the conversations we've had, they've actually told us that they, although they do apply pesticides that require respiratory protection, the growers who were on the advisory group with us said that they don't apply those pesticides more than one, two, or maybe three times a year, typically. Now, they also repeatedly caution that the exact pesticides that will be applied in any given year are hard to anticipate because a lot of conditions and pests and profiles affect that. But what it does indicate, based on the discussions we've had with them, is that the bulk of the pesticides that are applied actually don't require respirators.
Now, we've gotten a fair amount of contact from, or aware of contact from, groups that are concerned about pesticides and things like that. I wonder what you're hearing from the industry side, though, from people who own the farms and orchards, about whether they think the rules are too stringent as proposed.
We certainly have received comments from both sides of the issue. We have received comments from some individuals who think that the rules are a solid proposal and a good step forward as proposed. We've, as you indicated, have heard from people who indicate that they don't think the rules go far enough, and we've heard some fairly extensive comments from folks generally within the industry who think that the rules are too stringent, who don't understand why we added the extra 50 feet with regard to respiratory protection, who don't understand why we're going to continue to move forward with the rule when it appears likely that the EPA is actually going to withdraw their rule. And right now we're just, you know, we've heard a lot of those comments. As you know, the public comment period is still open. And so we're taking it in. We're listening to the issues raised and the discussion, and that's part of what we'll have to consider when we make a final decision.
Is there a point at which you'll decide if the comment period will be extended, as you were talking about?
Yeah, we actually have pretty well decided that we're going to continue it to January 31st, 2018. We just haven't officially filed the paperwork yet.
All right. So it looks like at this point the comment period will be extended to what date?
January 31st, 2018.
All righty. Michael Wood is the administrator of Oregon OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, and a lot more to be done before these rules are finalized on pesticides and who gets exposed to them. Michael, thank you so much for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Happy to do it.